Sometimes you just have to stop and think about what people are saying. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Great to be with you, and we want to invite everyone. If we sound a little tired or kind of flaky tonight, it's because we're busy in preparation for our upcoming conference on Friday and Saturday.
Yes, that's right. Semper Reformanda, Engaging the World for Christ. We will be starting at 9 o'clock on Friday morning and ending at noon on Saturday. And probably Chuck and I will both be totally fried by the end of it.
We'll be wrung out. Let's remind everybody that we don't actually go all night.
No.
There will be a break after about 7 p.m. on Friday, and they can go home and go to sleep.
Yeah, actually, we're going to be going till 9 on Friday night because Dr.
Right.
Joe Moorcraft, who is our featured guest speaker, is going to be having a general audience discussion. This is where you can invite your friends, your colleagues, and everybody you know who you think ought to hear this type of material to come and hear Dr. Moorcraft on Friday evening. If you can't stay for the entire conference, I would strongly suggest you come for the Friday evening 7 p.m. general session for hearing Dr. Moorcraft speak.
So again, $20, cheap at twice the price. Come out and join us on Friday and Saturday for a great learning experience and a great opportunity to get together with other Christians who are interested in being involved in having the church impact the world for Christ and become once again, as it once was, a force for the culture and, again, bringing of the people to Christ just as happened during the Reformation period. So join us on Friday and Saturday.
Well, in the meantime, Chuck, we're going to continue on with a discussion that we've had over the last couple of days, and we're looking at some of the fallout from the recent vote in the United States Senate on amendments to the gun control bill. And obviously, it didn't fare so well for the administration, for Barack Obama, or for the sponsors of the amendment, Pat Toomey, Republican of Pennsylvania, and Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, because they couldn't get enough votes to get it passed. Now, it wasn't for lack of trying, I'll tell you that, Chuck, because the White House, President Obama, they did about everything they could possibly do, including trotting out Gabrielle Giffords. And as folks who've listened to our program know, because we've talked about this before, Gabrielle Giffords was the former Democratic congresswoman from Arizona who was shot by Jared Loughner while she was having a town hall event outside in one of the communities in her district. And Loughner, who we find out was a fairly strong leftist and who went to the same synagogue that Representative Giffords had gone to, basically shot her at point-blank range. Of course, she has since recovered in the main from that. But the Obama administration decided to trot her out for a visual of why we need gun control. And included with that, Chuck, was an article that appeared obviously the same day in the New York Times, how convenient, supposedly authored by Gabrielle Giffords, although most likely it was authored by speechwriters in the Obama White House.
Yeah, it's a ghost, Barry. She has not really recovered mostly, because if she had recovered mostly, she would have run again for the office.
Well, that's probably true.
The fact is that, unfortunately, and let's give our sympathies to the woman, she was shot by a madman, and she has suffered brain damage. So the chances of her actually having written this thing, she can communicate, and she has a lot of her intelligence still, but she's not the same person as she was when she was in Congress.
No.
And you're right, this was definitely ghostwritten. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to find out that Mark Kelly wasn't involved in editing this thing, if not writing it outright. He has been among the chief sinners when it has come to parading her around in the same way that Sarah Brady paraded Jim Brady around from the Brady campaign against handgun violence. Yes, Jim Brady was severely brain damaged and handicapped by the guy who shot Reagan, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Mark Chapman.
Mark David Chapman, yeah. Remember, they always they have to have a middle name.
That's right, they have three names, yes.
They have to have three names, or there's a problem. They're not the guy who did it. What's really going on here is that she's being exploited. Now, she doesn't mind being exploited because she was always for gun control. So she's basically going to do what Sarah Brady attempted to do and use an emotional appeal based on her personal injuries to attempt to get an unconstitutional rendering of a law to take my handgun away because someone who was insane shot her, which really, when you think about it, doesn't make much sense.
Not really.
Why my pistol is a threat to her or any other politician or person, I don't know. The only person who it's a threat to is someone who might break into my house. Otherwise, the only thing it's a threat to is the targets that I shoot at.
Well, so this article that she wrote for the New York Times was headlined or titled, "A Senate in the Gun Lobby's Grip." And it was basically a smackdown of Harry Reid and the United States Senate and all of the people who voted against, quote-unquote, responsible, unquote, gun control. And so basically this was about a 900-word piece that ultimately relied on quite a few logical fallacies in order to make its point. Now, that's nothing new for the New York Times of printing logical fallacies. But it was interesting because James Toronto over at the Wall Street Journal took the time, Chuck, and he did the thing that we often do. And we want to tip our hat and thank him for doing it for us. He looked at it from a textbook logic standpoint to say, yeah, okay, where are the logical fallacies in her argument and in her this article? And boy, did he find a basket load of them.
Well, as we normally do, when especially in the New York Times, they've been a particular culprit. You often find these things, and it's a sign that people don't recognize them, that people no longer have the capability of thinking critically.
Right.
And so what we're doing here, and what James Taranto has done in this article that he wrote, is essentially he took it down and broke it down into the various informal logical fallacies that were present. And as always, as I mentioned earlier, the entire thing is an appeal to emotion. It's also, Taranto uses the Latin phraseology, which I rarely use, argumentum ad passiones, an appeal to emotion. Giffords used some ones that anyone who's taken my baloney detector class would probably recognize, and some that they wouldn't necessarily. For instance, she goes through, she begs the question. Well, there's a big shock. And if you don't know what begging the question means, it means essentially assuming that the thing that you are arguing has already been proven. In other words, you assume the correctness of your position and that it doesn't really need to be argued any further. You simply present it as fact. And that seems to be the entire standpoint, in fact, on the whole gun control question. And you see it when you hear things like, we have 90% support. Well, when you actually look at the polling data, as is pointed out in this article that we're looking at in the American Thinker, you've got about 90% of people who want the current law enforced, which it isn't being, and maybe a majority of people who might think twice about the possibility of needing a background check to sell your pistol to your nephew. She's got a lot of things like the no true Scotsman argument. Now, a lot of people don't know what that means. If you've ever heard the phrase, no true Scotsman would ever do this or that or another thing. In other words, if you were really patriotic, you would be for gun control.
Yes.
That's a no true Scotsman argument.
Well, and here's how that's set up, because that was the first time I'd heard that logical fallacy myself. And they take quotes from Giffords' articles. And this is the quote. These senators have heard from their constituents who polls show overwhelmingly favored expanding background checks, Giffords writes. She ignores the possibility that those polls are flawed and that the senators are hearing a different message from their constituents. Then she qualifies her claim of public unanimity. Quote, I am asking every reasonable American to help me tell the truth. And then Toronto says, see what she did there? The switcheroo to every reasonable American reminds us of a probably apocryphal tale about Adlai Stevenson. A woman is supposed to have said to him, Governor, you have the support of every thinking American, to which he replied, but madam, I need a majority.
That's almost Churchillian.
Yeah, exactly. but so that's the no true Scotsman move. And so in other words, if you're a reasonable American, you would never oppose the government taking away your guns.
That's right.
No true Scotsman would do that.
That's a classic no true Scotsman. She also, again, the appeal to pity.
Yes.
The false dilemma. Now, this is also called the false either or a false dichotomy.
Right.
Here's her closing gambit, as Taranto points out. Quote, to do nothing while others are in danger is not the American way. Yes, that's true, and that's why I stand against gun control.
Yes.
And in fact, I think it should be wiped out on the basis of the way we normally look at the 14th Amendment these days, that local gun control ordinances should be completely wiped out because the Second Amendment is very clear. And if the corporation doctrine is correct, then the states also and local governments cannot restrict the ownership of guns.
Yeah, exactly. The other false argument that gets thrown in here is one that Toronto calls it from the Latin, the argumentum ad baculam, or argument from the club. And we don't mean club as in a group of people all sharing the same beliefs. We're talking about the club, like the stick. This consists, Toronto goes on, in attempting to persuade by making threats. Giffords urges, quote, mothers to stop these lawmakers at the grocery store and tell them, you've lost my vote, unquote. And in other ways, for those who agree with her to work for the lawmakers' defeat. A call to action, not an argument. There is, of course, nothing objectionable about citizens in a democratic republic engaging in such action, but that goes for those on the other side as well. And it's worth recalling that the quote-unquote civility hypocrites back in the day proclaimed themselves troubled and outraged by the phenomenon of citizens confronting their elected representatives at public meetings.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny how when the shoe's on the other foot, it's suddenly an acceptable tactic?
Yeah, it doesn't feel so good when it's on the other foot. So Toronto really pegs this down. There are like nine or ten different logical fallacies in this 900-word screed that was supposedly penned by Gabrielle Giffords in order to excoriate and shame the United States Senate, who voted against one of the President Obama's keynote issues, which is taking away Americans' guns.
Yeah. And that's the bottom line. This is what it's all about. And the whole article was about the fact that Barack Obama is a serious lame ducker. And actually, this proves the point. Barack Obama was willing to hide behind people like Gabrielle Giffords, like former senators and congressmen. He was even willing to fly in people, the Newtown families, as if another fallacy, as if everybody in Newtown is for greater gun control because of what happened there. And in fact, what they don't tell you is the fact that in Newtown, guns were flying off the shelves.
Yes.
As people began to realize that Connecticut was about to do something stupid and banned a number of guns that people wanted to be able to possess. And so they went out and just stripped the shelves of the gun stores, especially in Newtown, but all around Connecticut, knowing full well that things were going to be outlawed. So this idea, she appealed to, that particular appeal is known as a bandwagon appeal.
Yes.
That particular fallacy, get on the bandwagon quick while everybody's doing it. And the fact is that everybody isn't doing it. And Barack Obama was trying to create this bandwagon appeal. The one mistake I think the NRA made was not flying in. Sure, they don't have Air Force One because they flew the families in on Air Force One. Why you had to fly from Newtown to Connecticut to Washington, D.C., I don't know. It's about 250 miles. You could have driven it easily. But that being said, the NRA didn't fly in opponents, as far as I know. I don't know if any were that were from also from Newtown, Connecticut. Maybe, perhaps, if you remember, in Columbine, there were people who lost children who were like, don't use this as an excuse to take my gun away. And that's exactly what was going on in this case. Doing his best to use it as an excuse to take our guns away.
Well, so far it hasn't worked, so Obama's promising that he will, by executive order, address this issue. Now, Chuck, we're going to take one bad, unconstitutional thing and then make it even worse by him trying to go off and run this gambit by executive order. We can only hope that maybe with all of the outcry from everybody to the Congress, that they will finally find the sentences in the Constitution where it says that they're the ones who are supposed to be making the laws, and that they will block and repeal any executive orders that the president puts forward trying to do the job that they have now said they are not going to do.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to expand on that, but we've got to sign off because we're out of time. Please join us Friday at our conference at Grace Presbyterian OPC Church on Postlethwaite Road in Columbus, starting at 9 a.m., $20 at the door. and that'll get you in for both days, Friday and Saturday. Again, starting at 9 a.m. on Friday, and we'll be done at about noon on Saturday. And join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.